speaker, Gary C., who Branson is coming up here to introduce.
My name's Brant, I'm an alcoholic. Thanks to God, I'm sober today, and I've been sober since August the 22nd of 1982.
That's important.
I did not know Gary until a few weeks ago, and I was tasked with finding a speaker and trying to find someone who was relatively close. I called a friend of lots of ours in Dallas, and he recommended Gary. And I told him, well, if he's good, I'll take credit. If he's bad, I'm going to tell him who recommended him. But I will say something about his commitment. He was going to fly down here this afternoon. Because of weather in Dallas, he couldn't fly, so he drove. And I don't know how many of you been on I-35 on Saturday afternoon in rainstorms in Dallas and San Antonio, but that is not a lot of fun. I think we're in for a real treat. We're going to enjoy Gary. Come on up, Gary.
Gary, I'm an alcoholic. Great to be here. It's nice to be at a meeting. Alcoholics Anonymous and be sober and be able to be in my right mind for the most part. I haven't had to do this before, but I'm not getting on Facebook, I promise you that. How many other speakers get their phone out when they come up here? But I need to thank a few people. It's amazing. I've never experienced this, where you come and there's so many people, you know, that have reached out their hands. So Nicole and Steve, thank you for making me feel welcome and you know, trying to get me fat and happy already, more than I already am. And Don for the CD, and Jim for all your years of service and sponsoring a friend of mine, Nick Nikolai, those of you that know him. And Nick, I've known for a little while, I thought, if you sponsored him, then you're surely to stay sober for the rest of your life. You know, I think almost 60 years of sobriety, I think you're up to a great start. I mean, this is good. But Nick and Roy for welcoming me, I think, and of course, Brant for keeping in touch with me and making me feel welcome as well. Another person I want to thank is Christina. I don't know where you are, if you're back there. It's a special, I don't know, those of you that know Christina, my wife sponsored her when she first got sober. And talking about commitment and talking about being willing to go to any length, the times that my wife couldn't pick her up or go meet her somewhere, Christina would take the bus. I mean, to take the bus is a big deal, mm-hmm. You know. I know a lot of you may already take the bus, it's not a big deal, or public transportation, but she took the bus and then had to walk a few blocks and do all this kind of stuff. It doesn't sound like much, but when you want to quit drinking, that's a big deal. I mean, you got to really want that. And she used to do that, and to hear she's, you know, got her license and all this kind of crazy stuff is such a great thing. And that was probably the most heartwarming feeling that I had coming in here, is to see Christina doing good. And to see what we do and how it, how it affects us later on, and to watch others grow, like our book says, is something we must not miss. You know, and to watch people and watch the people we've sponsored other people, and go on and sponsor other people, and they sponsor other people. And whatnot. The other thing is the music. I want to thank for the music. You know, this is really being cool. You know, I realize it's like some 70s song. I kind of felt high for a minute with the one. I had a slight flashback of 1971 or whatever, even though I was only 10. 73, 74, whatever. But, I want to make sure I'm clear. I hate when speakers go way over, and I'm not going to do that. So, what's it, 5 till 8? Is that the deal? Or 5 till 9? Is that when I'm done?
Yeah.
All right, so I'm going to get 5 minutes on what it was like. I can get it all in there. Get into some sobriety and talk about today and what we do to stay sober. You know what I mean? I haven't been in Dallas my whole life. I was born in Wichita, Kansas. There are 3 years. And I was three. And we moved to California in 1965. I was 3 years old and had already been to jail for selling dope. And I was tired at that point. a little baby prison out there, but no. We moved to California. It was a land of opportunity, you know, and that's where people went from the Midwest. A lot of them did. So I moved to Long Beach, and we lived in North Long Beach in this little one-bedroom apartment. My dad was an alcoholic. And it's a lot of the stories you guys can relate to. My dad drank too much, and it's later on he found out it's called alcoholism. He had alcoholism, and his dad died. The irony of this disease is that, and the recovery part of the disease and the hope part of the disease is that I am the same age as my grandpa was when he died of alcoholism. Today, I'm 53. My grandpa died of alcoholism at 53, acute alcoholism, you know. And so I see people that are like my grandpa was, and it reminds me of, one more time, what that says back there. You know, but for the grace of God, that would be me. And I get this. What a deal. But driving down here, you know, Brant was talking about that. And here, let me say how it is if you're new. Welcome to anybody that's new. And I will say this. Before I say what I was going to say about coming down here, when I was new, I saw people up here like me, and I thought, they have something unique and special. I can't do that. I'm not like that. And I'm here to tell you that I'm an alcoholic that sometimes is just barely hanging on. Not ready to drink, but I need Alcoholics Anonymous today as much as I did 32 years ago when I got sober, 1984. My sobriety date is December 27, 1984. I need it today as much. As a matter of fact, I need it more than being in progressive illness. I need it more than ever. But, so, I'm just another alcoholic. If you're new and you see the tie and a suit, I saw guys up here that looked like me and I thought, he's probably going to college, comes from a trust fund family maybe. He's wealthy, never had to do what I had to do. None of those are true. None of them. And as I get through my story, it'll be easy to understand that's definitely true. But coming down here, I couldn't fly down, so I was driving. I didn't have to contemplate it. It's just what we do. But as I was coming out 35, and those of you that have Google Maps, you look on there and you can see where it's red and green and yellow. And I look at the thing and I see there's red in Belton, there's red in Austin. That's a long line of like 40-minute delay, and then it's raining, it's thunder, and there's a lot of red in that. So I thought, I'm going to go over to this 130 and go 140 miles an hour on the tollway and down there in 30 minutes, you know, you're down. And, you know, and it's just, and I just had this passion to get down to this meeting, like I do a lot in my life, going to do what I do. If it's speaking at a meeting, or if it's going to a meeting, or if it's picking up a new guy, I'm passionate about what I do, and I love what I do. So, and I had that feeling, I kind of went back, it's like, remember that when you got the money in your pocket? And you're ready to go to the bar, and you got all your people that are meeting you there, and the drug dealer, and this girl, and you're getting ready to get after it after 4 or 5 days straight. And it was that feeling. Not quite like that, but it was similar. So it's fun. It's exciting. The deal is, going five, doing what Christina did, doing what I do, doing what so many of you do in this room to stay sober, we do it because it's a better deal. I would have driven 5 hours if you said Club 12 has free cocaine and vodka on Saturday nights. Would you drive there? I would skateboard in the rain to get down here. It's not a big deal. I drove here. It's not a big deal. You drive 5 hours. But I'm an alcoholic family, you know, really, dad managed to stay, get sober in 1973, and he didn't get sober in AA. And he white-knuckled it for a while, and my mom's a superstar Al-Anon, you know, she got in Al-Anon before I got sober, and thank God for Al-Anon, the loving program Al-Anon. And without Al-Anon, I don't know if they would have been together, stayed together, but they're together, they're married 54 years, and they moved out of California about 15 years ago to Hawaii, and the things that have come to me, the promises that come true to me has been unbelievable. The things that happen, and I forget so quick how great I got it. And I can tell you, there's people out there that are carrying a load that's so heavy. They got kids that are sick. They don't have a place to stay, and I could go on and on and on down the list of things that people have to deal with. And if my cable goes out for 5 minutes, I am ready to just, I want to talk to the owner of DirecTV right now and get this, you know. And, you know, I got to step back and really remember where I came from and where I'm at now and how I got here. And I need to stay focused on today and what I'm doing today to stay sober. I'll tell you, you know, December will be 32 years of being sober. I got sober at 22. I'm 53 years old, and I'm what else? Do you care about anything else? I don't know. Alcoholic, that's about it. I want to get all that other stuff out of the way because you don't have to do the adding. You get 32 years, you get sober, that's 50. I'm 53, and I'm a Scorpio and a Libra. Put that together and figure out how crazy that is. I'm balanced, but I'm not. I'm crazy. You know. Southern California in the 70s is really when it started. I grew up in a little community called Belmont Shore, and we moved there in 1969. And in 1969 in Southern California, there was a lot going on. Those of you that were adults in 1969, I was seven, and we moved into this house that my grandparents put up the money for, and they bought this house, beautiful Spanish two-story. It was $36,000, something like that. It was a couple blocks from the beach, and my parents didn't have any money. They borrowed it, and we moved in there, and the mortgage was $175. I remember that. And we moved into this deal, and I had my elementary school was next to junior high, and it was a couple blocks from the beach. We ditched school and go to the beach. So I learned how to surf and go to the beach and do all that stuff at a young age. And I always hung out with the people that were older, and they were smoking pot and doing acid and quaaludes and mushrooms and peyote and drinking all the time. I know this is AA. I'm not going to get into the drug thing too much. I'll just mention a few things here and there. And I know there's only alcoholics in here tonight. There's no drug addicts. Yeah. I just want to make sure that we, out of respect to all of the alcoholics, and there's nobody that's ever dabbled a little bit with non-habit-forming marijuana or anything. I used to blame it on my circumstances. It's the 70s in Southern California. I didn't have anything to do with it. Come on. And my first really memory was being in my buddy's brother's bedroom, and it had a flag on the ceiling, a big flag. Like, what is that about? I mean, I guess Vietnam, and I don't know. You know. And they were smoking out of this thing that was like a big pipe thing. It was this tall, and they were, you know, and I didn't know what that was, and I was kind of, you know, and they gave me a little bit, and I was 13. And started drinking wine, and it's you know, cheap sugar wine, sugar water stuff, but you could drink like 7 gallons of it and puke and then drink more and do all that stuff. And so I started out young. I was I got kicked out in eighth grade of my junior high school, and got expelled and went to another school, and there it started. And I got drunk and high for 10 years. And before I surrendered, a whole lot happened, and a lot of it's just hilarious to think that I could ever pull it off, and to think that to control and enjoy our drinking, if you think about it, it still sounds kind of good, doesn't it? I mean, if I could do 2 grams of coke and just 3 double vodkas in one night and go to bed. That would be my combo, the combo platter. If I could do that and go to bed by 11, you'd have a different speaker for sure. Wouldn't be here. But that combo sounds, it just makes sense to me. It never went that way. Never one time. I have never, that I can remember, have ever had a drink or two and stopped. I can't remember ever doing that. I've tried it. I've made up all the stories. Chapter 3 talks about more about alcoholism, about different things that we do. Or we drink weekends when it's sunny, rain, car, no car, whatever it is. And you make up a whole bunch. And we can increase that list ad infinitum. And we give it a shot trying to increase the list, don't we? All different reasons we tried. I'm mad at her, and, you know, and I wouldn't be an alcoholic wasn't for her, and on and on and on. But got out of that that school, and I immediately went to this new school, and, you know, I was an attention seeker, so I wanted to, you know, I wanted you to like me right away. But I always did things that made people not like me. That doesn't going to make any sense. I want you to like me. And so I called this guy a name, and I won't repeat it. And he, I asked him what he was going to do about it, because he said something back to me. You know how we are, you know, what are you going to do about it? Well, he was one of those guys that wasn't going to talk about what he was going to do about it. He immediately did it. He knocked me out, gave me a concussion, I ended up in the hospital. And that's the kind of stuff that happened just over and over again. Now, when you're in the middle of that, when I was in the middle of that, I was not thinking about the pain I was causing my parents. I was not thinking, you know, that was a pretty selfish and self-centered act I did. I think my parents are hurt. I'm not going to do that anymore. Having kids now, I have a 21-year-old and a 17-year-old, two girls. So God, I don't believe God is a punishing God, but if he was, that would be one of the things maybe that he would. They're great kids. They're really good kids. I'm very, very fortunate. They're sweethearts. I'm serious. So I got a fake ID, and I started doing little, I was always doing little business deals. And like some of the speakers, you know, I... Earl Hightower, I heard, you know, we had him at Citywide in Dallas back in February, and he had he called it a marketing and distribution company or something like that. Something like that, I don't know what he called it. That's the same thing I had. It was a smaller scale whenever we had these things. And, you know, and in the earlier days, it was bootlegging booze. You know, it's all the same thing. You know, we're trying to make a little money, and it's all illegal, and we're going to make it right. We're going to handle it like a serious business, because we're serious, you know. And, not thinking about any of the price that we'd have to pay to do that. Big price to do that stuff. And so at 17, I got a fake ID, and in the meantime, I've really loved the roots music, 50s music, some of the stuff we heard tonight, you know, the blues and mainly 50s and country stuff. And at that time, one of my idols was Jerry Lee Lewis. I loved The Killer, and, you know, he was the man back then. And you would think I was from Faraday, Louisiana, or Nashville, or somewhere, but I'm in Southern California, listening to all this weird country music, and I started pulling my hair back and being the 50s guy, and it was kind of different, because people were surfing and kind of metal, a lot of metal guys, a little longer guys, and a lot of them are my friends, and I just kind of went through this 50s route, you know. So I ended up working at this club. I was doing Jerry Lee Lewis impersonations, because I'm always trying to, you know, be somebody else at that point. You know, it's nice to be yourself. It doesn't take much work. You just, if you don't like me, I don't care. But it's nice to be sober and be myself. I don't have to be anybody else. What a great deal that is. But I was impersonating Jerry Lee Lewis, and it was a fake ID. And I was working at a place called Happy Days. It was in Irvine, California, and I worked for a guy named this guy Jack Wade and Wolfman Jack, for those of you that are old enough.
Yeah.
Wolfman
yeah.
Jack, good. Yeah. You got people that are, you know, he was a DJ every Saturday night, and I was impersonating Jerry Lee Lewis. My friend was doing Elvis, and it was free drinks and $100 each, two shows on Friday night, two shows on Saturday night, and it was 17 years old, and I ended up getting a little 62 Cadillac and really playing the role, you know. And it was working, and it was working, and it was fine, you know, it was fun. And I was driving down the freeway on 405 one night, about 3 in the morning. I had one of those little mini baseball bats, this little Louisville Slugger. They're about this big. I just had it for you know, anybody starts anything. And I'm a small guy, I need protection, you know, that's a baseball bat, you know. Now they just shoot you with an automatic weapon right here. Yeah, so I'm standing up in my car. It was a convertible, and I found a way to, you could stand up like Leonardo DiCaprio, you know, King of the World. You know, I could stand up down the freeway in this convertible, and I have the little baseball bat down here, and I hold it down and accelerate. I'm standing up down there. I'm standing up, and I got a girl with me, and we're naked, and we're going down the freeway.
Oh, jeez.
Because that's what people do, right? When they leave a bar, that's what you do. We're naked, running down. Take off all your clothes. I love you. And it's a matter of 5 minutes. We're running down the street. say, we're going on 405 freeway, this cop pulls us over. That's what happens when you're naked driving a convertible. Go down. Guy pulls over and says, driver's license, whatever. I don't know what he said. I'm sure of some kind of blackout. But I do remember that he said he recognized me from this little club dance. Local, you know. I said, yeah, Gary, yeah. He said, man, he goes, what are you doing? I said, you know, we're getting dressed, you know. She starts in. She was, at that time, I was a vodka drinker and I was a happy drunk. I drink a lot and I'm drunk and I'm driving drunk, but I'm a happy drunk, pretty much. Gin, no good. Tequila, no good. Vodka's good. Vodka equals love. So I'm driving down there and she says, she had a different attitude. She was one of those. I don't know if none of you can relate to this, but she kind of looked over at the cop. She says, "Do you?" And then she started MF and this and that and that da 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 da. And I, you know, I said, "Stop, stop. We're gonna get out of this." You know, I didn't say that. The cop's right there. So she starts going on and on and on. And of course, we went to jail, both of us. You know, she starts getting belligerent and telling what, you know, all the stuff, which what she's gonna do and all the stuff. She was really, really drunk. And so I went to jail that night. And those are fun memories. You go to jail overnight, it's not a big deal. You know, I called my girlfriend the next morning. She came and got me. It was fine. I wonder if you guys didn't laugh at that. You're really not as sick as I was told you were when I got down here. I'm kidding. But those are fun memories. I went on to do some stuff. Bill Medley and Bobby Hatfield, the Righteous Brothers, opened up a club called The Hop, not too far from there in Huntington Beach, Fountain Valley. And they had me and my partner come out there, and we did shows there every week. And that led to doing Saul Gold Hits, the Dick Clark Show, and Putting on the Hits, and some other talent-type game shows back in the 80s, early 80s. And I had a lot of fun. Hi. And in the midst of that, I was going to jail for public I'm so used to saying detox these days, public intox, and fighting in public and crashing cars and doing DUIs and that kind of stuff. Nothing too crazy. Started getting into another business. It got a little more serious when it was right before the movie Scarface came out. If you remember Scarface, Scarface is a movie about love and forgiveness. So I saw that movie and loved everything I saw in that movie and wanted to be that guy. So in the midst of my acting career, I started getting an acting coach, and I started doing auditions and started doing some stuff. And things were good. Life was good. And started getting into more of the other stuff and always drinking. And I will say this, all joking aside about drugs, alcohol is the only thing that I've ever done that made me feel truly like everything was going to be okay. Everything else just got me really paranoid or sleepy. Mm-hmm. But alcohol, for an alcoholic, made me feel like everything was going to be okay. Mm-hmm. And when that stops working, we're in trouble. We are in trouble. Mm-hmm. And there came a time where that stopped working, and I had gotten in a... I saw a guy, I won't go into the details about it, but I saw a guy out in front of my window at my house and with a gun. He was pointing at me through my window. I thought I'd rather run out of my apartment and run away from him than him come in my apartment, you know. So I ran, you know, a long way, a mile, with no shoes on. My hand, a lot of my feet were hamburger, just terrible, terrible, terrible. And I ran through these two guys that were in an apartment. I ran through their apartment. I ran in there to the door and I said, "Please help me." This guy chased me with a gun, and he said, "Get out of here. Get, you know, of course, you can get out of our apartment. We don't have anything to do with you." So I ran out of there and went down the street, and a lady was driving her car real slow. It was in traffic in Belmont Shore, and I jumped in her car while she was driving. And I said, you know, which is normal, which is 5 miles an hour, you just run and jump in the car. Of course, everybody does that. So I said, "Please help me, there's a guy chasing me with a gun." And she screamed. About three cars back was a cop car, and the cops pulled me over and pulled me out. And I said, "There's a guy over there with a, you know," and it turned, there's nobody with a gun, ever. But if you stay up long enough and you do the things I was doing, you too can see a guy with a gun. So I was doing all that stuff, and it was just, you know, they call it now cocaine psychosis. I don't know what that's. But I'll tell you what, if you don't sleep for 5 days and don't eat any food, I mean, I just about see somebody there stone cold sober. I mean, you know, we need to take care of ourselves. So those are the kinds of things I did. I got into some bad, business and marketing and distribution related deals that were not good. And they were close calls. And I'm lucky to be standing here in a lot of ways. And I ended up, my mom and dad helped me, and I ended up going to a doctor that was known for shock treatment. I don't know if shock treatment is even around today. I don't know is there shock treatment around. I never understood that. At the time, I didn't understand. They said, we got to get this thing ready. Shock it out of you. Just put the stuff on, and it just shocks it. Alcoholism just comes out of you, I guess. Going in there, and all it did was kind of piss me off. Shocking. What the hell are you doing? So, it's not good. And then they did they do the sodium pentothal, which is a hypnosis kind of deal, where they're going to talk to your subconscious and get in touch with your inner child or something. I don't know what they're doing. That didn't work. So, not that inner child work is bad, for those of you that are therapists here tonight. I'm going to make sure we get that good. But it's after you get sober. And, so I had a lot of things pending. Alcoholics, we got a lot of things pending when we get here, it seems like. There's just a lot of pending stuff. You know, I got the third summary probation. I think if you add up all the probations, it's just hundreds of years. I mean, 3 years here, 4 years here. Now the room got quiet. I'm assuming that you guys still got probation. I don't know what. It's like probation. So you got to be a big boy for 3 years now. Can't do anything bad, 3 years. So I had a lot of summary probation. Got off. My mom's brother, my uncle was an attorney, well-known attorney, and went on to be a judge. And he knew some people. And I always got these breaks. I always got a lucky break. And it took me to, in 1984 was really the end and the beginning. And I say that in that order for a reason, because it was the end of that life and the beginning of a new life. And one of the times my mom, coincidentally, I think, saw me walking down the street in Bell and Shore in her 74 Dodge Tradesman van. Remember those? And you can see it a mile away. It was canary yellow.
Yeah.
Porthole on the side, and she pulls up next and says, get in the car. And I was already running around the streets. I was already not welcome at my parents' house. And I'm 21, and I'm weighing 120 pounds. And I've got a lot of pending stuff, and the people are after me, and you owe money, and then the case is pending, and on and on and on, and felony charges. And she says, get in the car. So we went over to Coast View Memorial. And Coast View Memorial was in Long Beach, but it wasn't near the coast, and there was no view. And not that I needed that to get sober, but I went in. It was still, Brent and I were talking about it. It was in the early 80s, so it was at the time where, they're still kind of the beginning stages of the treatment centers. Betty Ford, and before that was Nut Farms, and then went treatment centers. And so I got a treatment center, 30-day program, and they gave me everything, 12-step, abstinence-based. You do this stuff, and get yourself a sponsor and go to meetings and work the steps and get a big book and be of service and do the things we do. And I said, absolutely. Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. I'm going to do all that. And I knew how to look. Some of us are absolutely the best liars, world-class liars. You look it right in the eye and mean it when you tell them, absolutely, I'm going to do this. That was my word, absolutely. And I got out of there. I was out of there a couple weeks and didn't do anything. I got my own program I was going to do. And it's my own program. I recently had a friend of mine who's a pretty well-known actor, and he relapsed after a long time of sobriety because he couldn't find his way to the meetings or the steps or anything, I guess, and lost a bunch of stuff and had to start over again, relapse, all that. He wrote a story, a semi-autobiographical, fictional, and part of it is he's rewriting a new program. It's not the 12 steps. It's called the Four Leaps. And Charlie Sheen is the founder of the deal, which I thought was hilarious. But that's the way I thought. I used to make up what I thought was necessary for me and I don't even know what the problem is. I relapsed and was out, you know, from July during the Olympics in Los Angeles in 84, July, until December 27th, and running around the streets and sleeping in cars and getting in trouble and doing what we do on the street to stay drunk and high. And the thing that saved me, I had one thought that was good, and that was that I had never done AA. I had never done AA. And if you're new and you're struggling and you don't know if you're an alcoholic or you've never, you can't make it too long, I had the thought that I had never done those steps and I had never done what they suggested. I had never done those things. So I called Miles, and AA works like this. My friend Miles Evans, who's still sober today, came and reached out and did a good old-fashioned service call when I got out of treatment. He said, "My name is Miles, and call me if you need me, and I'm here." I didn't call him, of course, I relapsed. But then later on, I remembered his name. He was a pretty well-known guy, and I called him, and I said, "You know, and here's the words I used. I remember, hey, Miles, it's Gary. Remember me?" "Yeah, I do remember Gary. I'm ready to get sober. I'll do whatever you want. I'm willing to do whatever it takes." Those are the words I used. "I'm willing to do whatever you want me to do." So no reservations, nothing lingering, like, "I'm just going to do this and she's going to be happy," or "until I get these warrants taken care of," or "as soon as I pay those guys that are after me," and all that stuff. None of that was happening. I wanted to be sober because I couldn't live that way anymore. I can't do this anymore. I can't do it. I didn't even know if I wanted to stay sober, but I knew I didn't want to live like that anymore. And that's a good place to be. And I went back to that meeting, and he picked me up at a, you know, I always love alcoholic cars when you're new. You know, people have alcoholic cars, and they're great. I mean, back then, they're no different than they are really now, but they're different colors. But 70s and 80s, he had the, you know, he had picked me up at a green, horrible green-colored Ford Granada, some kind of Landau top, peeling, and he had short shorts on, like dolphin shorts. Remember the dolphin shorts? Remember the 80s? Real short shorts. Guys were wearing these around public. Short shorts, t-shirt, and he had, was eating like walnuts and trail mix and the stuff in his car. And I got in his car, and I go, now I grew up in a gay community, Long Beach, and I'm not homophobic at all, but I thought, when I got in the car, I go, I got a gay sponsor already. I'm straight. I'm a gay sponsor. If the gay guy coming to get me, and now he's going to hit on me, I must be willing to go to any length. You know? I got the car with him, and we drive down to Newport Alano Club, and we get in there, and we start doing the deal, and I just listen, and I took down the meeting, and we still get people. I walked in there, and I looked around, everybody looked clean and fresh. Jobs and money and cars and all this stuff, and I've got nothing. You know, I walk around and I say, "These people do not understand what I've been through. They don't understand." Yeah. Automatically separating myself. That's the way I live. Separating myself from you. The conscious separation of. That's the deal. That's how I got sober. Chuck C is the what I like. That's what I heard when I got sober. I got sober the same month and the same year that he died, December 27, 1984. And so I was hearing the guys in the room, Norm Alpe and these kind of guys, and they would come in there and they'd talk about the conscious separation of and the ego, and how the ego needs to be smashed. I walked in there, and they would say, "Look for the similarities, not the differences." I don't see anything. I don't even know what those words mean. But it was like a monkey with cue cards at me. I mean, you could do this program almost with cue cards. Go to a meeting, don't think too much, go home, go to sleep. I mean, hold up a cue card. Okay, I'll do that. So, I mean, I did that. And I immediately got into service work. And here's the deal. I went out with these guys, and we went to places like the Navy Brig in Long Beach, when the Naval Station was there. We went to these prisons, Terminal Island Prison, went to hospitals, nut houses, Norwalk Mental State Hospital. These places, we're going to go share our experience, strength, and hope. And I got 73 days. I don't know what I'm doing. The guy was just telling me, how long are you sharing for? He goes, "You're 7 minutes. You get six guys on a panel, you get 7 minutes. 7 minutes? That's like 6.57 too long. I don't know what to do. Just tell them what's happened so far. What do you do? How do you stay sober?" I said, "I go to meetings and I read the book and I call my sponsor and I do this stuff. That's it. That's what we do." I did that. I started to feel better about me. I started to feel a part of. That's what this is about. This is about feeling a part of. I remember a guy, a Red Gate Memorial, a guy came up to me, I was 9 months sober, a guy came up to me, he goes, I want to thank you for what you said. That's the first time anybody ever thanked me for what I said in AA, or for any other thing in a long time. And came up and thanked me, and I started to feel a part of it again. I got the year chip, and I started to be more of service, and I started to read the book. And it wasn't that exciting, and I got commitments, and I didn't like to be in the assistant. Every group, there wasn't a non-smoking group. There wasn't one. Period. Everyone smoked, but they gave more commitments because you're the cigarette picker-upper, and then the other person is the cigarette can dumper person. And then the coffee cup person, the assistant coffee cup person, and then the chairperson, the tables, and the everybody has got commitments. You got a commitment, you do it. And I thought, oh, this is, what part do I get to decide if it's an optional? What part's optional? I don't want to do this stuff. And when things become too optional with me, I believe that equals death. Sounds hardcore, but here's the deal. I start doing less and less. I start feeling less a part of, and I start feeling alone. And I start feeling lonely. I start feeling sad. I need relief. And if I'm not doing the stuff that we do here, what's next? It's the only thing that's next. We drink, period. I know a guy up in northern Louisiana, just relapsed after 30 years. And I know some people in Los Angeles, some famous, some not. Sober years and years, working steps. Doesn't matter if it's 3 years, 40 years, 20 years. And they couldn't find their way to the meetings and stopped doing the steps. Whatever it was got in the way. I've seen people, so many people, and this is part of my experience because I learned from it. When I watch people and sponsor people and I take them in my arms and I hold them and I say, you're going to be okay when they're crying. Just go to school. Get an education. Or go do what you want to do. You know, if they want to go get a license or do what they're doing. And they go get the license and they get professional and they get a business and they buy a house and they have kids and they buy things and they get married and they do all this stuff and they become responsible in society and they are a sober member. I see them do that, and then they stop doing the very thing that got them all that in the beginning. So now, the money or property or prestige or the house and chasing that next 100 grand or a million or 1,000, whatever it is, has now become the most important thing. I'm here to tell you that I'm 32 years in December. I have been lately. I don't know that I've ever had such a great program personally for me. And I gauge that on how I feel inside when I'm not around people. See, my relationship with God is not, it's not when I'm around you, although I like that because I like to share that. My relationship with God is how I'm doing when nobody's around. And especially when things aren't going that good. That's when God, that's the God I want. I want to feel close to God when things aren't going that good. And I want to hear that little voice of hope that I can pray for and hope for. And to end with, to me, this whole deal is about, it's about recovery, and it's about service, it's about unity. But so much of it for me has to be the God that I've come to know and love and constantly seeking. If he were sought, I didn't even know what that meant when I got here. Sought, what's that? We've got to seek, and so I'm seeking God. And I think that if God were to have a plan for me, the times I'm in doubt, it would be to continue to do the things that I do to stay sober. They got me sober in the first place. Affirmative action. If those of you that are struggling with God, I didn't go to church. I'm not a church guy. I'm just not. I don't have any problem with it. I do see where people are right that are in church. I do. I like to hear what they have to say. But the affirmative action. I want to end on this. This is how I reestablished my relationship with God. I started doing the work. I started doing the service. I started to feel a part of. I kept doing those things over and over again. And I started to feel a faith. And that got stronger and stronger and stronger based on the stuff I was doing. And what we're searching for, we're searching with. It's in here. It's always been in here. Mm-hmm. It's just been blocked. The greatest thing I can do in this sobriety is to block whatever it is that's in the way of my God. So I love you guys very much. Thanks for having me.
Before we close up, we're going to do a sobriety countdown, and Mike's going to take care of that.